helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:06 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. We have missed you. We have missed you. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m., I'm joined right here on News 104.5 WOKV by the big guy, Sasquatch the Yeti, 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. What Larry does here on the show is he brings his 20-plus years of experience toiling in the soil so that your grass may be greener, your fruit may be sweeter, and your flowers if forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, my job here on the show is to share with you 20-plus experience of crawling around attics and crawl spaces so that those problems and challenges you face in your home might be a little bit simpler to diagnose, might be a little bit simpler to understand, and avoid being ripped off by someone who gives you improper information that you act on. What makes the show the most fun for us, though, is being with you, sharing thoughts and ideas, and taking your calls. The call-in number, 855-765-1045. And if you've got something that would be better if you sent us a photograph, you're welcome to do that. You can do that by going to Facebook, our live stream at Home Pro Inspections. Just go to the live stream, or at Wally Conway, go to the live stream. You can post your question or picture there, and we'll integrate you right into the program. So, let's get rolling. Larry Fine, sir, what were the adventures in the yard this week?
A little cooler.
It's the evening, the mornings have been unbelievably cool. You know, which coffee do you like? Which gas station coffee do you like better?
Which one do I like better? Well, I will tell you, I stopped through Daly's this morning.
Daly's. I love this new racetrack coffee. I just stopped there this morning. It's unbelievable.
Excellent.
It's and reasonably priced. But in the lawn, you know, the right now I've adopted this new motto. If the lawn ain't right, nothing's right. Because
whoa, I showed up there with Mama's not happy, is not anyone happy.
Exactly. You know, we just got done on a project. We were working on the lawn, and the lawn was it's a big lawn. It was like an acre lawn. But when the lawn was got the lawn fixed, you know, and it looked just absolutely gorgeous, and it really sets off the landscape. So I mean, when you have your lawn not looking as good, there's some brown spots and not enough irrigation because of your because the angles of the are not being covered completely, but it doesn't really enhance that beauty of the house, and that's what we're striving to do when we're working on a landscape.
The lawn to the house,
right,
is like the little black dress to the woman.
Exactly.
It sets the stage for the accessories,
which are
the annuals and other things.
Love that. The little black dress. But
yes.
Yeah, so getting the lawn right is important. But so some of the things that are going on now in the lawn are getting ready to happen is a change of fungus. You know, the types of fungus because of temperature. But so you want to preemptively spray now with your fungicide if you're do it yourselfer.
It's not a change in the fungicide you're using, rather than time to reapply. So you got a good strong dose there.
And you get a good strong dose when the fungus is changed. They're changed the types of because of the temperature is going to go up. Nighttime temperatures go up, and the humidity is going to radically change. So let's beat it out of the box right now. Apply some systemic fungicide on your lawn. I went to Lowe's and Home Depot and then looked at all their bags of the fungicide. They're using some, they're actually improving. They're improving the fungicides that they're using on the lawn. And the fertilizer's improving too.
Is there a particular active ingredient?
Well, propiconazole is a pretty good one.
Across all brands,
across all brands, that's the active ingredient.
When you talk about fertilizer, we often talk about the delivery mode. Is it water soluble? Is it not? How about when we're looking at fungicides?
It's just about the same. Now, they do have some fungicides that are microencapsulated, so they'll release over a period of time. But propiconazole is a very good fungicide. And if you wanted to switch up, you could. If I was doing my own lawn, I would switch up. I wouldn't use propiconazole every single time. I may go to thiophanate, which is another active ingredient commonly in the bag. And what you want to do is look on the bottom of the bag. It will outline the active ingredient, and then make sure you got two different active ingredients for fungicide because you're going to have to put more fungicide on during the season. But right now, the funguses are not a big issue except for take-all root rot.
I have a question about the fungicide, the propiconazole or whichever the active ingredient is. Mm-hmm. When we look at antibiotics for people,
right.
We're constantly worried about creating these superbugs and resistance and whatnot.
Sure.
Do the fungus,
is less and less effective. Because things are going to mutate and change. It gets less and less effective by changing it up. You always want to try to do that.
That's why you want to rotate which fungicide to use.
Right, right.
Yeah, got it.
Then put some slow release, low nitrogen fertilizer on your yard because it's March, April, May, June, July. You know, we're going to be June right now. So you've run out of gas. You know, the fertilizer is probably all depleted. So again, going with that slow release is good for the environment. There's less runoff. It doesn't evaporate. You pay a little bit more, and it will just trickle out to the lawn probably over 60 to 90 day period.
Does the delivery mode tend to be liquid or solid, and does it matter?
Well, it can be solid or liquid, but normally you're not going to find at Lowe's or Home Depot or your local garden center a slow release liquid.
That's
a professional application. It's going to be a lot more expensive when they do like that.
Less frequent application if I do that? So if I had you come out and do
it. Way less frequent. And also you can use ironite to green up your lawn too because iron is an essential element to chlorophyll production. So when you have iron in your grass, a lot of times in the summer when people don't want to put fertilizer down, they'll use ironite, and that will increase the chlorophyll production. That's what you see is that green. You can also use that on your citrus trees. If your citrus is not recovered completely from being, the cold, you can put a little ironite in foliar feed. It should green right back up. So that, you know, thinking about the bugs, you know, if you chinch bugs, you want to use Arena. Arena is one of a very, 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 very good product. And when it starts raining, we may start having more sod webworm. Again, people always call in on sod webworm. They won't kill the grass. They defoliate it.
And what kills bugs isn't what kills fungus in the same vice versa.
Right.
Yet another thing
you got to add in there. But think about those things when you're out there working in the yard. Then we're working also on a lady's yard. Her lawn is absolutely beautiful. Even my workers are, this grass looks great. But when you have these little patches in the yard that persist for 5 or 6 years, you know, and you just keep working.
Just deciding if you're going to take action after 5 or 6 years?
No, you keep watering it and fertilizing it and nothing happens. And
I had a wound on my head like that. Wouldn't heal for 5 or 6 years. Turned out it was cancer.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, should have gone a little quicker.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I didn't know that. But these little patches that are really, the grass is just barely leaping by, thin. The blades are small. It doesn't really have much vertical growth. Those, more than likely, that's going to be nematodes. So I work with the client to show her how to take care of the nematodes. And it's fairly simple. You just get some mill organite or green edge, sludge. And you just don't worry about the directions because you can't really kill it, but you put a good amount on it. You know, not so it's mounded up around it, but you can definitely see it on the ground. Then that'd be your first step. And then after that, get yourself a large 5 gallon bucket, mix up some fish emulsion and pour it over that. So you want to do that 4 or 5 weeks in a row in those one spot. If you can do 3 is good too. But that should kill all the nematodes. Nematodes don't like organic soil. So if you're having a nematode problem throughout your yard, I would switch to the type of fertilizer. I start using green edge, sludge, and I use generous amounts of it because replacing a lawn is always expensive. You know?
Right.
So you want to make sure you take care of that. You use that in your flower beds. You can use that anywhere you suspect nematodes. And sometimes, nematodes are an insect, but they're microscopic, so you can't see them. All you can see is the result of the damage.
Can you see like a little bit of a discoloration under there? It looks like grayish or blackish.
It just starts thinning down, and the roots will get bulbous. You know, you'll notice a little bit of bulbous in their exaggeration in there. They're not smooth. Leaving little bulbous, little bumps on the roots. That's their damage that they leave. You can tell if you got them by the damage that they leave. That will help you.
Got it. What is that kind of a sooty looking look you get under the leaf?
That is going to be on Hollies. That's going to be on Hollies.
What is it?
That's a insect, T-scale.
Is that the droppings from the insect, or is it the little micro insect?
That's a little insect. Yeah, that's a holly. So on the grass, you know, you got insecticide, slow release fertilizer, and now you really want to pay attention to the mowing, because when you shorten your grass, let's say down to 2 inches, you're going to shorten the root system. So the roots are normally in St. Augustine, 24 inches. That's how deep they'll get. But if you shorten it to 2 inches, you're going to bring the grass up to maybe 10 inches. You know, I've seen them 10 inches.
But 10 inches tall grass?
No, the roots.
You
want the roots now to grow down deeper and look for water. Because this dry spell.
What is the optimal height for heat/dry resistance?
4 inches. 4 inches. 4 inches is the optimum height. So if your lawnmower guy is scalping the grass, he's going to stress it out and it's going to need more water. So also, when you have some height, to the grass, 4 inches, you're shading out the ground. In the shading out the ground, you're going to, cooling it, and then also reducing the amount of evaporation. So keep that in mind when you're mowing your lawn this year. I had an interesting call about whether to paint the base of trees when they plant a young tree. And if you're planting a peach
tree. What is the thought? What is supposed to be the gain of painting the trunk?
Well, painting the trunk is keep it from getting insects.
Ah.
And, unlike painting a wound, which we already know, we've talked about it.
That's bad.
Is not a good idea. But painting the base of a peach tree or young tree is not a bad idea.
Really?
Now, they prove scientifically that it prevents insect vegetation and sun scald.
Particular paint, oil-based, elastomeric, white.
Latex is good.
How does the bark then breathe?
It doesn't really need, latex is permeable, but it doesn't really need to breathe, but it really protects it from the sun scald and boring type insects.
I could see it would cool the trunk if it was white.
It's just a reflective value.
Yeah.
So the bug, if the bug climbs up there, he's going to be gnawing on latex. He's not using it, though. This is not very digestible latex.
Or it could be faking him out. He sees that it's white.
Yes.
Could be the reflection off the white gets in his eyes, because they don't make sunglasses that small.
Yeah, exactly.
Little bug glasses.
Yeah, they look like they got sunglasses.
Like some of
these gigantic eyeballs when you're looking at them. But, talking about that, how do you identify chinch bugs? If you suspect your lawn to have chinch bugs, it's pretty easy. You can take a coffee can or any type of can and cut out both ends and then press down on it tight in the suspected area, pour water in there and soap, and they float to the top. A chinch bugs looks about, it's probably about an eighth of an inch. And they're black or brown. The mature ones are going to have little red dots on them. That will be a chinch bug.
Where you press that can into the ground prior to filling it with water, it's at that edge between the green and the brown.
Right.
Where they're munching.
That's where they're going to do it. But, one thing about chinch bugs is what actually kills the grass when chinch bugs are on your grass, it's actually their saliva. So once they get an infestation in that area, it's going to be dead grass.
The saliva, that's interesting.
The saliva is toxic to the grass.
Bad stuff. It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got a very brief break. We'll be jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Who will be number one? Maybe you. Show 8:23, beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. Grateful that you are with us. Should be a beautiful day today. Looking for something fun to do, something different to do, and you're feeling kind of home-like and kind of garden-like? This weekend, once again, is the Springfield Tour of Homes.
Wow.
People have got all their houses dressed up real nice, their yards all spruced up real nice.
They have a summer.
This is the spring tour.
Oh, wow.
And then they do it again, at Christmas time. They have a nice group of festivities. If you'd like to tour the tour itself, that is the interior tour of the home, it's today beginning at noon, tomorrow beginning at noon. The tour inside the homes is a ticketed event, so it's only a few bucks. I think it's 10 bucks.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you that for sure. And the tickets are available at 904tix.com, T-I-X, 904tix.com, beginning at, let me see how much it is. Oh, it's 20 bucks.
$20.
How about that?
So it's $20. It's great fun. There's a large number of houses. Now, if you didn't want to spend the $20, but you still want to enjoy the tour, you can get your bicycle. You can ride along the tour route, see everything and all the festivities and the good stuff.
Will you be able to go in and look too?
To go into the houses is $20.
Oh, $20. Okay.
Yeah, for all the houses and a few other things that have opened up. So
are we getting any food and drink and?
Yeah, you know, got a cookie or some Kool-Aid or something similar to that. But anyway, the neighborhood's really coming on strong and, it's fun to go there. I will tell you also, if you haven't been down on Main Street in a while, they have,
it's beautiful.
The merchants are really dressing things out nice. There are multiple breweries, Fifth and Main, and I forgot the other. Crispy's right across the street.
Right.
The, cafe down there around 4th
nice
Street.
A couple of nice coffee shops.
Yep. So it's really, gentrification, I guess you'd say. Some people find that
nice
word.
Nice landscaping
the right
in the median. Looks good. Looks really good.
There's lots of homes for sale down there. So. Yeah. The Springfield home tour is today beginning at noon, tomorrow beginning at noon. It goes till 5 each day, the part where you get into the houses. And then, of course, things stay active down on Main and any other good things around town. So don't want to miss that. What would you say? Now, we've had this conversation pretty regular about the trendy plant of the decade. So like in the 80s, you had to have a sago palm, and that was cool, and it's not so cool anymore. You know, maybe a little after that with the palaca holly.
Plants come in trends.
What would you say, based on your time floating around Springfield and elsewhere, so we went back to basically the turn of the previous century, early 1900s, what would have been the quintessential
That's an interesting
100 years ago.
That's an interesting question.
While you're noodling that one,
go ahead.
I would tell you the quintessential art piece.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
Was that Maxfield Parrish print?
Oh yes.
One time, that Maxfield Parrish print. I believe it's called Reclining Nymph.
Yes.
The young nymph.
Yeah. Yes.
Laying down that Maxfield. That.
When was it done?
Early 1900s.
I believe
I could look it up.
Yeah.
But that print was the most popular print ever produced. It hung in more homes than any other print.
Wow, that's amazing.
Maxfield Parrish.
I wonder if he didn't have commissions and royalties at that time.
Well, he was pretty early on, you know. When you look at this guy, the guy who's the painter of light? Kincaid.
Yeah.
Thomas Kincaid. Yeah. He was sort of the... Real art people would find that appalling that I'm comparing Maxfield Parrish to Thomas Kincaid. But in the idea of commercialization and replication of an individual print or piece, they were sort of similar to each other about 100 years apart. But if you didn't have a Maxfield Parrish in your foyer,
You were nobody.
You were nobody.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah, I've seen them everywhere. You know, when you go in houses, occasionally you still see them.
Yes, it was the quintessential piece of its time. So I gave you time to think.
I think the number one plant would have been azalea.
Azalea.
Azalea was so popular in the South. Even when I'm going to deserted lots, when they're building on the lot again, you can see a 100-year-old azalea there.
Huh, I hadn't thought about
that. Azaleas are probably... In the lower southeast, azaleas were very, very, very popular because what you had as flowering perennials was very limited. In the 20s, they had a lot of plants, but they didn't have the variety that we have today, unlimited varieties.
Yeah, I'm noodling that thought through. You know, at Scott Mill, where I live, Mr. Scott, who had the mill, that whole street is lined in old azaleas.
Oh, yeah.
And I think his home was built in 1878 or so.
Azaleas were the thing to put out there. Yeah, azaleas. And then, of course, boxwood is the evergreen.
And the azaleas, was that indigenous at the time? And people
I worked on a place on Manor Road where they, the homeowner, there was a plantation there and farm there at one time, and he owned the land, but they used to bring in azaleas from Asia. Azaleas and citrus trees.
Is that one of the old places that's still there? Or is just a
no, it's
the lot
it's gone. Just a lot of gains. But he built on the place, and he said that's where they used to bring in azaleas.
There's azaleas along Scott Mill, Mandarin Road, which is sort of the same location in one sense, that are feels like close to 20 feet tall.
Oh, yeah. Those are 100 years old azaleas. I remember we removed one of his azaleas, a couple of them.
Relocated?
I mean, oh my God, I made a mistake. I thought, you know, I didn't realize what 100-year-old Roselia would take to get it out. I mean, you know, underbid it, you know. I said, oh my gosh, those things were unbelievable to get out. Even with a skid steer, we use a skid steer. They were just so well rooted. I mean, they're just, the Southern Indica, I think, was the, quintessential plant for that.
Azalea, we're going to go with that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's 6:29 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us.
Right back.
Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 836. Grateful that you're with us. Love to have you join us. The number to call in here live. No matter where you're listening from, you could be listening at 104.5 FM. You could be listening at WOKV.com. You could be listening to the Facebook stream as well as watching video there. The number remains the same to check in, 855-765-1045. Love to hear from you. Larry, you mentioned the fungus is active now.
Yes.
We're getting ready for a changing of the guard in the fungus universe.
Mm-hmm.
We are also eminently waiting for that swarm of young lovers known as the subterranean termite.
Are they swarming now? Are they in the beginning or the end of their swarm?
We're kind of in the
middle.
Beginning of the middle, I guess you might say.
Okay.
Starting to get pretty active.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Preparation is always a good thing. You know, ideally, you will have had a termite bond in place. Those termite bonds come in two basic flavors. They're actually not called bonds by the state. They're service contracts, but bonds, the vernacular here all the time.
Yes.
There's a repair bond and a treatment bond.
Right.
You have a treatment bond. It is a bit less expensive, and it covers considerably less.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a treatment bond or contract on your home, and suddenly you have a swarm of termites, and out comes the pest control company that you've hold that bond with,
mm-hmm.
and they say, "Wow, look at all those termites!" And they treat that, and then they leave.
Treat and retreat. Retreat. Yeah.
So they treat and leave.
Okay.
Now, what about the repair? That's on you,
mm-hmm.
unless you have a repair bond.
Right.
So it's very important that you know what you have and that you have what you want.
Right.
Ideally, you'll have that repair bond.
And that's the reason a lot of times you don't want to change, you know, so.
Very good point. So if you are purchasing a home or you presently have a pest control company and there's a bond under it, it's in your best interest to keep that current policy in place. And the reason for that is you never want to be in a situation where you are told, "I'm so sorry, that repair is not covered. That's a pre-existing condition."
Right.
So you can avoid that particular problem. And in the event that you need to change for some particular reason, whatever that might be, you're just plain old unhappy, you need to be sure that that particular issue is solved and solved in writing in that change.
Let's say, for instance, I'm working out in my yard, have my garage door open, and it's been out there. I walk into my garage and I find, you know, a group of termites with wings, and they're moving from one
place. Well, the garage is a transition zone, because if you suddenly see a bunch in the garage, it's possible they just flew in the garage door.
Right.
But the next action remains the same.
Right.
You want to get that complete termite inspection,
mm-hmm.
and that way they can determine what was the source. Is it inside the house? And it is probably time to treat. Quite frankly, if you have them flying in your door or flying in your window or flying in your garage,
right,
that's even if they're not presently eating your house, it's telling you the activity is close.
They're attracted,
to
right, attracted to that area.
So
right.
I would definitely do that. And the way to make your house less attractive to the termite is to keep your home as dry as possible.
Right.
So what do we mean by that? You know, some things you can't control.
Right.
Irrigation is a number one. If you're wetting your house every day, essentially it's like saying free beer right here,
right,
and pizza too. You know,
right.
you don't want to do that. Trimming those bushes back so things can air dry. Keeping the mulch back so you're not retaining the food.
You're right. That's a bridge. It's a
exactly.
bridge for them to go through. That's like when they said, you know, the latest university study says that putting mulch does not attract termites.
It's the retention of the moisture.
It's the moisture having the mulch absolutely touching the footer or the foundation of the wall there, that's a bridge for them to climb in.
We don't want that.
And then, you know, I see a lot of termites damage on wooden window seals.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I really see it. And if you have an area that's not painted, you know, paint that area. Because when I'm walking around, you know, inspecting plants, I happened to look just the other day at a window seal when I was walking. I said, oh, my God, that's a tremendous amount of termite damage there.
Right.
And it was active because, you know, see their pellets in and stuff like that.
Good. Well, the pellets is drywood termites.
Yeah.
Which is another whole group of
right.
intense problems.
Right.
A place to go to get definitive source information is WDO, which stands for Wood Destroying Organism.
Yeah.
WDOhelp.com. And what's good about that location is there's nothing for sale. And it links to each regulatory place, each informational place, and other locations so you can get baseline information. That way, when you're in dialogue with your pest control company about what to do next, you're a little bit better informed so you can blend their input and a little bit of sales input with what you're seeing actually and factually. So WDOhelp.com, good place to go. I would really appreciate it if, as you're hanging around with your landscape buddies, you remind them of those two or three things.
Yeah.
No irrigation,
absolutely,
blowing against the house. And here, this is from God. I don't think this is in the Bible, but I know this is from God.
Okay.
God gave us bushes to protect our homes from sprinklers.
Right.
So if you could please stop putting sprinklers, irrigation heads, in or behind the bush.
Yes.
Put it out in front of the bush, you know, so that the bush is one, receiving the water, which is a good thing, and two, stopping it from back spray on the house. I get asked very often, what should the distance be between the back of the bush and the house? And the answer to that is that distance should be as wide as your hips.
A couple feet, 3 feet, yeah.
It depends. If you're a wide load, it might be 4 feet. The reason for that is so that you can get back there
and look
to be sure that things are dry and things are doing what they're doing.
You do not want, you know, we were removing shrubbery, the other day. You don't want the shrubbery laying up against the
Never.
It's going to cause algae, mold.
It grows sideways, too.
Right.
It's asymmetrical.
Here, you know, and if you have a cheap thing you can really do, it's not a bad idea if you're having that problem, especially on where it's not dries out like the north side and you're running irrigation, you can install a drip line. A drip line is very easy to install. You just attach it to your irrigation system. It does calcify after those little holes after a while. But if you get calcification, instead of trying to clean out the hole, which is darn near impossible,
drill a new one.
Put a new one in. Exactly. Yeah. Just get yourself a landscape staple. Go over to the where you have it, and you see it's just oozing, and put a new hole in there.
Uh-huh.
So you could do that over 20 years.
How about these soaker hoses versus the drip line?
I mean, they're okay. I mean, I prefer the drip line. It's more durable.
Got it.
And I think
seems like a wooden clog is off.
Yeah, right. And then easy to cut a new hole in there. Just punch a hole in there. And just a drip line, let's say if you went to you can get, you know, a couple hundred feet of drip line and at Lowe's or Home Depot for, you know, I think I looked at the price, it was $80. And it's very easy to install. It uses hardly any, your PSI, your gallons per minute. It doesn't use much gallons per minute on your irrigation system. So if you have a very zone that's really charged up, or you want to have a dedicated zone, you can put your drip line right on that. And that's going to be more effective because it's not evaporating.
Sure.
It's running on directly next to the plant. And then if you have cardboard down and around your plant, that actually holds that water much better. So that's a great – we're actually doing that to some perennials. We're doing a lot of perennial planting. And all the shrubs along the side of the street, we put there was drip line in. And I dug up around the shrubs the other day, and they're very moist because the cardboard's around them. So that's a great idea. You know, we were working on another location in – you know, a person goes away a lot, and then they don't want to, you know, they're going to have weeds. You know, you're not is traveling, working hard, doing all the things he needs to do. But when you have weeds in your paver system and you don't want to use Roundup, because, you know, people are afraid of Roundup or any type of herbicide, you want to use completely natural. Vinegar is a very good natural herbicide. And it's slightly acidic, so it's going to be some reaction with the concrete, but it's a little bit. You can mix it in there probably about a cup, you know, in about 2 gallons, and that will get rid of those weeds. And then if you want to put some pre-emergent, you can use cornmeal. Actually, you can use that in the.
Let me ask you a thing about the vinegar. It makes me think. We often use vinegar to decalcify aerators and right. other things, you know, when you get that crusty corrosion right. in, like at your kitchen sink. Could you put vinegar in that drip line?
You could, but getting it all clean, how are you going to – you'd have to have some type of apparatus where it would run – pump it in there.
Yeah, pressure.
But it would definitely – it definitely would work.
Pump a little.
You know. You can use also you on herbicide, you can use alcohol. Alcohol is pretty good – baking soda. Baking soda is another good. See, what you want to do is have something that's similar to the concrete composition. Like you put salt on it all the time, there's going to be a reaction. There's going to be vinegar in a light amount. It's not going to be bad. But if you use baking soda, it's even better. Just put a little baking soda because baking soda is alkaline. So is your paver system. So we get that done. If you don't want to use Roundup, you can spray that on there, drop some on there. Also, you know, you can use Preen as your post-emergent, your pre-emergent, sweeping it into the cracks. That's going to prevent over a 2-year period. It takes really around 2 years to get the thing to completely effective. Do you use Preen?
It takes 2 years for the weed to defeat the Preen?
No, for the Preen to build up in the soil enough so it is going to be have a negative effect on the weeds. I know Preen was a big thing years ago, and it is effective. It's basically cornmeal, but it does add some nutrients to the grass because it is will do that because it has some nitrogen. So that's a way to take care of your driveway. You know, taking care of your driveway is important because of, you know, it's one of the largest features of your landscape. Next to your lawn, and if you have a good looking driveway, you know, if you spend the money on the pavers, keeping it weed free and making it less effort is always important. And then if you have not had your driveway sealed, if you had concrete paver installed and not had your driveway sealed, you're just, you know, it's gonna wear out, discolor much faster than it would be if it was sealed. You know, sealing the driveway protects also the paver fines from water erosion. There's a multitude of reasons why you need to see. If you have concrete pavers, not the case if you have clay pavers. And a normal driveway is around $2,000. You have to pressure wash it, then they have to resand it, and then they seal it. The easiest route to reseal is always water-based. You know, it sprays out. But if you want a harder and a better sealant, you got to go to a solvent base. It's a little more difficult. You're going to have to roll it out, spray it, and roll it out. So, you know, get those driveways looking good because it's like a large component of your landscape. When the driveway's in the grass and then you put those things together in the house, looks like Alice in Wonderland.
Well, they're expensive. It's an expensive feature in the home. And
right, it's an expensive feature. Right, exactly.
It seems to me if you're going to be a sealer, if you're committed to sealing your pavers over the long haul, you really need to start that early on.
Exactly.
So that it never declines.
Right.
Reduce the fade, reduce the stain.
Right.
Start it out all the way, right, and stay on that plan.
Right.
Because the restoration is complex and expensive.
Right, exactly. If you can go out there and get it done this spring, then you can rest a little bit, maybe a couple, 3 years, and then do it again. But use solvent base. It's a little bit
better for the long haul.
And though it's about 4 times the price.
Yeah, the prep didn't cost anymore.
Yeah. The prep does not cost anymore. It's just a solemn basis, 4 times the price, and it will take you twice as long to apply.
It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Jumping right on the phone to your call at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 6:55 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. I'm here with Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. Me, I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. 1045. Checking in with Todd, who's spreading some dirt. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Todd.
Thanks, Wally.
Thank you.
I got a question for Larry regarding, I don't know, you guys talked about this in the past, but I'm looking to raise the side of my yard up. I'd like to raise it a few feet, but
a few feet.
I'm surrounded by a preserve, and it's just, I think a lot of my dirt's kind of eroded away. But I've got a river birch and a magnolia tree. They're both pretty good size, 25, 30 feet, but I don't want to kill them. So how much dirt can I put close to the tree to raise the level of my yard without having to worry about that?
About a half an inch.
Why not raise the whole tree since you're spending time and money?
I don't know. It looks like a heavy tree.
Yeah, well, you suggest that you do it yourself.
Yeah, probably get a skid steer to lift that. But it can be transplanted. The trees can be transplanted, cut, and raised up, you know. But what happens is, so people understand why depth is important, because I don't think when people planting plants understand what the root system does. You know, it absorbs nutrients, absorbs water, and also breeze. You know, the plant is, the roots are on the surface are intaking, are breathing, okay? And once you put dirt over them, you're suffocating them. That's why a lot of times when people call me and they plant a plant, and they say that the one right next to it is doing wonderful, and the one they're comparing it to is doing so terrible, it's the planting depth. They're not being able to breathe properly to do so. When you take a tree, plenty of people have done this, and they've put a foot or 6 inches of dirt over there, and they say, and I say, that's a dead tree, sir. He says, no, it's green. No, it's going to die. It's going to die. It just doesn't die overnight. You know, sometimes it can, but they normally don't die overnight, but they're dead within the year. Okay. Once you backfill over them a foot or 2 foot a day, it's a dead tree. You know, the only tree I've ever seen that would be an exception is, which is amazing, bald cypress. They are amazing trees because they grow by the waterway. Water, they can deal with low oxygen and all other things.
I've seen people try to put bulkheads around the tree before they fill, and then they end up drowning the tree.
Yeah, yeah. It's you have to raise those trees, or you have to taper down to that spot, you know, and then with 2 feet of dirt. All right.
What if I did, if I covered up, a third of the area and not, the whole area around it?
But yeah, that will help. That will help.
How about
that
if helps. You lost a third of a lung? How would that work out?
you can still
work good, but you're not going to be able to do any long-range running. But, if you taper, come to the drip line, start at the drip line, and start tapering down, you know, to a half an inch, you're going to be, or even further back would be even better.
Yeah, because I know the roots go pretty far away.
They're a long ways away.
So if I did if I covered up a third of the area, you think that'd be all right too?
Yeah, Start at the drip line and then start your taper down to the drip line. That's gonna, of course, all your water is gonna be running out in that direction to the trees now, but it's not shouldn't uh-huh. harm them.
Or you can have the water discharge out the back end, back toward that refuse or whatever you call it.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't drown it.
Or, you know, you can rent a skid steer. I'll tell you how to do it. Just rent get a shovel, cut down around the tree, wrap it up with some landscape fabric, and then rent a skid steer, put a strap on it. You can get these pole straps, wrap it up very carefully, and then just dig around again when you pull it up. You know, and then just rebury it.
Or hire Larry's crew to come do it and drink a beer.
We can do it, but, I mean, if you want to take a shot at it, you know, there you are.
Pretty sure a skid steer is not going to pick this tree up.
A skid steer.
Three stems, and I think each stem's probably, 5 inches across.
A 20-foot tree, absolutely, we'll pick it up.
I know, it's probably 30 or 40 feet.
Just get a bigger skid steer. I plant trees that are 10, 15 thousand, 25,000 pounds. Skid steer would do a 20-foot tree. You know, there's a big one will handle the weight. All right.
Thanks, Todd. It's 7 o'clock here at News 104.5. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-7265.
1045. We'll be right back.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend. Discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. It's 7:10 on a beautiful morning in Jacksonville right here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday morning from 6 until 8 a.m. here on News 104.5. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. It takes care of all things that grow on the outside of your home. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, caring to your questions and needs of those things that relate to your home. Then, what we really do for fun is receive your calls, take your questions at 855-765-1045. I had shared with you earlier that this particular weekend from noon till 5 is the Springfield Home and Garden, just like the show, Home and Garden Tour. We've got a real friend of Springfield on the line, Miss Janie Coffey. Janie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wally, how are you?
I am having a wonderful time. You know, Janie, this when the tour is happening, people get real excited about living in the neighborhood. And one of the things I've noticed after inspecting for 25 years now is that when a real estate agent gets excited about showing homes in Springfield, if they don't live there, play there, eat there, work there, and understand the glorious nuances of the neighborhood, it's not quite so much fun. Have you noticed the same thing?
Well, I don't think anybody can convey the passion that this community evokes in people other than the people who actually live in it, who are just so lit up. It's like no community that I've ever lived in, and I've lived in many across the world even. So I would totally agree that using a local agent is probably the best way to go if you're looking to buy in a historic, special community like Springfield.
From your experience living in the neighborhood, when a new person moves in the neighborhood into Springfield who wasn't, you know, they don't know anybody there, they may not even have been old house friendly, what do you see as the first big great surprise that usually comes to people?
Oh, without a doubt, the first big great surprise is the amazing community that Springfield is. And I think what everybody here would agree with is we move here because of the homes, or we get interested in Springfield because of the historic architecture of the homes, but we absolutely stay because of the community. It is the most diverse, engaged, loving, supportive community of neighbors. I always make a joke, if you put on, we have, this is for real, we have over 40 Facebook groups for basically
in
any
neighborhood.
Possible interest you have, yes, gracious. In one neighborhood. But a few of them, of course, the most lively. And you can literally put on Facebook at 2 in the morning, does anybody have a cup of sugar? And I would bet by 5 a.m. you probably have a cup of sugar sitting on your porch.
That'll
and three other
hands,
people
Janie.
Saying, come on by. I'll give you that over the fence.
Got to let you go in a minute, Janie, but I was peeking at the website about the tour, 904tix.com. I think I saw the Clutho home on there. Is that open on the tour, or that was just a pretty picture?
I have the thing open right now. We have several homes on the tour, which starts at 12 today and 12 tomorrow. And it's our 41st tour. I don't know if you knew that.
What excites me about the Clutho home, Henry Clutho is the quintessential architect of Jacksonville, you know, for the really the founding of it as a thriving city. I had the good experience to inspect that home about 15 years ago, and then also had the great experience there at the Clutho Apartments right there on Main Street. And when I saw his home was open, or where I think it might be open, that's enough to get me out there. You know, we're always talking about Prairie Style and Frank Lloyd Wright and all these guys. Clutho studied directly under Frank Lloyd Wright, and so much of the early architecture of Jacksonville, both residential and commercial, has that prairie influence with the big eaves. So while I was going on about that, Janie, did you figure out, is it open?
I'm still looking, but you know what, Wally, if you saw it on there, I'm going to go with with that. And even if it weren't, there's so much Clutho architecture in Springfield that you'll see walking around. And we have the Clutho Park, which is Jacksonville's very own Grand Central Park, hugging the entire community.
Good point. Gotta let you go, Janie. Give me your coffee schedule in Springfield. We'll meet up at Christie's or wherever your favorite spot is. Okay, dope.
And I'll be seeing you this week on your show. I'm coming into the studio.
Ah, perfect. Well, we'll make plans then. Have a beautiful day,
ma'am.
Thank you. Thanks, Wally.
Bye.
Bye, ma'am. All righty, over to the west side, checking in with John, who's got some low spots in his yard, too. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Awesome.
Hey, I have a goal to repurpose some oak leaves that have piled up in my yard. I wanted to know the wisdom, or if there is any wisdom, of mulching up some of these oak leaves, mixing it with a manure or some topsoil, and the idea that I can level out these sections of my backyard, and perhaps it'll compost and turn into to lawn.
How deep are they?
Maybe 8 to 10 inches, and they're kind of oblong, about 8 or 10 feet.
You definitely could compost that up. I would go to Home Depot or Lowe's, your local garden center, and get some green edge or mill organite, and apply, rake it into that. Maybe do it 2 or 3 times, and that's what's going to accelerate. You can even use sugar. Spray it with some dissolved sugar in a hose and sprayer. That will accelerate. What it does, feeds the bacteria, gets the thing started up. Either one of them would work. I think the green edge and mill organite is a little more effective because it kind of dissolves or it's a slow release. So that would be an effective way to do it. And you will have a very rich lawn right in those spots.
How deep can you do that? You have to do that in layers?
No, you can probably do 8 inches.
Not,
you know,
really? Wow.
It's 8 inches thick on top of the ground, right, where you have it?
Yeah, well, you know what? I've got one test spot that I've only just mulched up some of these oak leaves and spread it out just to level it. But I was wondering if I should put grass seed into that mix.
No, you can't have let's make sure you understand. You got to make the compost. It has to be composted first, not on top of the grass. Okay. You could have a little layer on top of the grass. I mean, a thin layer, then put some maybe sugar and water on there, or just the Coke. You know, like Jerry Baker years ago used to recommend Coke. That's basically the same thing.
Compost first, then apply.
Accelerates, right, and accelerates the decomposition. So that would be a good way to do it, or stack it up in a pile and just make yourself a quick compost pit, and just put sugar and water, or you can use mill organite, either one of those. But it's definitely, there's nothing in anything that you ever do in the lawn or in the garden. There's nothing like enhancing the soil. I mean, you can buy after the fact fertilizers, they're very good and high quality and do a lot of things. But if you get the soil right, everything's going to be right. And you're going to have to put less fertilizer on it. So keep that in mind.
I got a quick follow-up. I've got a couple of dogs, and I've never really put weed and feed or fertilizers in my yard. I understand they can get in their paws, and if they lick it up, they can give them problems. Can you confirm? I mean, I have.
You spray these things. They're probably 90% harmful, but it's. No one, if the dog is a short-lived animal, so she doesn't really have a manifestation. But they're walking around and exposing this thing stuff every day. You know what I mean? And there's got to be some reason why dogs and a lot of animals continue to have some health issues, maybe over application. I think there's no actual scientific research on. There is some, but pets are affected by some of these things we put on our lawns. And if you wanted to use an organic, we were talking about early in the hour about using corn gluten as a pre-emergent and a fungicide. Is there some doubt on the fungicide? But it does feed the bacteria that eats fungicide. But pre-emergent, you put 20 pounds of corn gluten on 1,000 square feet of lawn, and that will work as a pre-emergent and an herbicide, okay?
Hey, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, yeah. John. Have a beautiful day. 7:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got a very brief break, and we'll be jumping right back to you. Love to hear from you. That number is 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 7:26 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Wally Conway here from Home Pro Inspections. Need me during the week or right now, go homepro.com. Larry O'Neill's here. Need Larry at any time. Larry'sGarden.com. Heading down to Palm Coast, checking in with Liza to see if we can help her with her lemon trees. Welcome, Liza.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, ma'am. Did I say your name correctly?
It's Liza.
Liza. I'm so sorry. Well, welcome, Liza.
That's okay.
What's happening with those lemon trees?
Okay. I planted a lemon tree a couple of years ago, and it's growing beautifully. I had a ton of blooms, but no fruit. Now, the leaves are turning very pale yellow, and they seem to be curling. I went to Home Depot, and I bought a citrus fertilizer, and I applied it already twice. But it doesn't seem to do anything good.
Okay, did you put the correct amount per tree size? I mean, how much did you put down? Do you follow the directions? You read directions about how to put it down?
Yes, it does say, I don't remember exactly, but it does say to apply, I believe, 1 tablespoon, I think, of it. I probably overdid it a little bit.
1 tablespoon doesn't sound like enough, ma'am. That's not enough.
Not enough. Okay, so
I think that's a problem on fertilizer. So, you know, a tree, normally a tree that's, say, 4 foot in canopy, you got to put down 1 pound. 1 pound 4 times a year. It needs 4 pounds of fertilizer 4 times a year, and you got to put down 1 pound. 1 pound would be about a double handful of fertilizer on a tree
so
that had a canopy 4 foot in diameter.
Yeah, it's about 4 foot, I would say.
So, yeah, so okay, 1 teaspoon means you probably put down
A couple ounces.
Yeah, no, you need to put down about almost 60 times more than that.
Couple of cups.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
so evidently I missed the bloom for this year, so it won't bloom until next year.
No, they may bloom, remember the spark. It's been really super dry this spring, not unlike last spring.
Right.
So what I would attempt to do is maybe just lightly prune, but you don't have much of a tree, so you probably don't want to get carried away with that. But, a little bit of fertilizer, again, following the directions, and don't count your first application as a zero. And then put down that, and then water. If you water for maybe 2 weeks every other day, you're putting down around 10 gallons of water.
Okay.
You should get some rebloom and also maybe get some fruit. One of the reasons they draw fruit or don't form fruit is it's not enough watering, and it's been so dry.
And that fertilization water now will be prepping for next year.
Right.
It'll be larger and stronger.
You have lots of benefits. Right.
Right. Okay. That sounds good. Another question. I'm using the ashes from my fireplace on some of my plants to prevent bugs. Am I doing the right thing?
I've never heard any bug prevention on that, but there are some nutrients you can get in the ashes, but don't get carried away from it on it. You can throw the soil in balance. A little bit is good, not a lot.
Right. Okay. I will do that. Thank you so very much, guys. Have a great day.
You too, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
It's 7:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 7:37 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. You need Larry during the week. Larry'sGarden.com. Also got the telephone number 346-1970. If you are outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, Palm Coast, wherever, Brunswick, 904-346-1970. Me, Wally Conway. Easy to find all the time online. Go homepro.com or by telephone. And people are presently standing by to take your calls. 268-8211. If you're down in Palm Coast, Brunswick, Gainesville, Lake City, wherever you are. 904-268-8211. 8211. Heading to St. Augustine, checking in with Mark. See if we can help him with his bathroom plumbing. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Mark.
Hey, how you doing? I have a bonus room that's upstairs, and I was in the attic, and it looks like there might be enough room to squeeze in a small bathroom. My question is, for the drain, can you use the stack that goes to the, there's a bathroom below, and it has the stack, the vent stack?
Yes.
Is that, can you use that as your drain for the toilet and sink upstairs?
Well, the answer is yes. That all funnels into the same system, essentially. So, yeah, it'll tie into that main drain and then vent itself through the roof. That's how it's done. Sure.
Okay. And just a kind of a different topic, I was just curious, have either one of you guys heard of hydro blocks? And if so, what do you think of those?
Hydro blocks? In what context?
It's a drainage system for your yard. It's like a giant plastic 2x12, and supposedly it has a wicking action that can be used to drain that can't clog.
I think
you don't
I've
use
seen
any,
that in parking lots. As
right.
a,
they use
as
it in parking lots yeah. and stuff like that. They also incorporate it with
porous pavers.
Yeah, right, in paver system. You know, if you wanted to drive over the lawn, and then you without having a driveway, it just prevents rutting. Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I mean, if you have a soggy lawn, you can also use this French drain. A French drain, the perforated one with some styrofoam beads in there, and that will drive. You usually get about 10 feet wide area swath, which is water-free. It really very effective in drying out land.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Right. Good luck with it, Mark. All righty. Plumbing reminds me of water. Water yeah. reminds me of drinking, and drinking reminds me we want to drink.
I'm a heavy drinker.
Water.
Heavy
drinker of water.
Yep.
I so trust Mark Kinder and our friends
right.
over at Affordable Water because of the expertise that they're able to get into my mind and into the customer's mind to do good things. This whole issue of hardness is beginning to drive me crazy.
Right.
In that people, in a bogus marketing sense, are claiming to be solving hardness. Hardness is a very specific thing.
Right.
It's, according to the Department of Interior U.S. Geological Survey, hardness, this is what hardness is. It's a measure of the grains per gallon of calcium or magnesium that's dissolved in the water. It's just that simple.
Right.
So the purpose of water softening is a process to remove that hardness, those specific grains. There's a scale. The scale of water hardness goes from 1 to basically about 50 probably.
Right, right.
But anything below 1, that is 1 grain of calcium or magnesium in water, is considered soft water.
Yes.
And in Jacksonville, our average is 17 of those grains.
One of the highest in the nation.
And by the standard, that makes it very hard water. That's the highest term there is. So
right.
we have very hard water. If you want it soft, the only way to get it soft is through that particular softening process. Now, here's how you know that you're doing the right thing. The easy thing to do is call Affordable Water, but in a more technical sense, though simply technical, is you measure, that is the technician from Affordable Water, measure the present hardness
before,
of your water.
And then after.
Then treat, put it in the system, measure after. And the assurity is that it gets there. Now, people sometimes get their panties in a bunch
right.
about this whole issue of salt. They have several issues with the issue of salt. One, they don't want to have to load it up. Well, that's no problem. For exactly what it costs you to do it yourself, they can put you on a service plan. They'll come on out and do it for you. So
yeah.
we've removed that. The next thing that people get their panties in a bunch about as it relates to salt is, doesn't it consume all this salt and this is a bad thing? No, you can have the system so that it monitors the need for salt and it uses the minimal amount.
Let's
and
know.
Lastly, on the salt panties in a bunch category, is the issue of sodium. If you have an extreme sodium sensitivity,
right.
or if you're just concerned about this itsy-bitsy amount of sodium, all they need to do is set up your softener to use potassium.
Right.
So then you're getting itsy bits of potassium into your system, kind of like eating a banana,
my term, not a science term. Lots of potassium, that's a good thing for you. So it's easy to do.
Yes.
The other thing that comes in when people are making choices about water treatment in the big category, as well as water softening, the specific category, is the issue of maintenance, care, and service. There are woefully few companies who sell water softening or treatment equipment that also have the skill and the experience and the parts, which is a bugaboo,
yeah,
to maintain them. And home prospection is one of the things we're able to do. With our home inspection, we warrant the future performance of the water softener. So if we inspect the home and the water softener is presently not working, easy to do, have affordable water fix it, and it falls right into the warranty position. So from that point on, the warranty is actually covering any future failure. So affordable water comes over and fix it. Residential warranty services pays the bill. So,
you know, having a guy, like I said, when I go in and buy equipment, you know what I mean, I want to make sure it can get fixed. You know, some oddball Japanese piece of equipment that, you know, works plenty good, you know, but then where am I getting it fixed at? When I bought a piece of equipment and it takes me 4 weeks to fix it, to order the parts. You know, when you get a good water softener installation and you can trust Mark, he's going to be able to fix it, repair it, and service it. And get it done within a reasonable amount of time.
I was down at the building department Tuesday morning. Once a year, they invite me down and we have this great conversation. They have about 50 inspectors down there. They got more than I do. But anyway, we have this conversation about what are they seeing in new construction versus what are we seeing as from the home inspection side as things age. And it reinforced in my brain that in Duval County,
yes,
the installation of a water softener requires a permit.
Yes.
In order to pull the permit, you need to be properly licensed to pull a permit.
Right.
So in Duval, you get a double protection. Affordable Water does this everywhere, even when they don't need a permit.
Right.
It is that you, that permit process tells you that it's one of the very, very few people who are licensed to do it. So
yeah,
Affordable Water, affordablewaterjacks.com. I know them, I like them, trust them. All righty, over to Mandarin, checking in with Danny, who wants to share his thoughts and comments on the world of home inspection, one of my favorite
topics. All right.
Danny, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hey, good morning. I'm in the process of selling my deceased folks' home, and I had Home and Pro inspectors come this week and do an inspection. I just want to let you know they did a great job. Andy was my guy, and just couldn't have been any better.
Thank you. I'm sorry about the loss of your folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andy's a delightful guy. He's very experienced. I'll tell you something about Andy also. He has also, over the years, been a very active real estate investor. And it's interesting.
Yeah.
He has the eye not only of the home inspector, but that eye of what would this cost? How does this roll into the mix as a person who often puts his own money on the line, not just for his primary home, but for others. So I'm real grateful, Danny. Did you have any big things on your to-do list after your home pro inspections?
Nope. The only thing I had that I was going to ask you about, my, you know, where the line feeds in for the power, you know, you got your pipe coming up out of the roof. The tension from the line going to the pole has pulled it over, so it's pulled up the flashing and the little the
rubber boot
the base
around
of it.
Yeah.
The rubber boot, right.
Yeah.
And I need to get that fixed. What would you do about that as far as getting the roof route? I don't want somebody to come out there and
has the pole
make a big deal
bent
out of
at all,
it.
Or is it strictly just the roof related?
It's just roof related.
Just roof related. Yeah, you don't want to mess with that yourself. I would absolutely get a licensed roofer. I'd give Fidus a call. They could do that for you. Reliant could do that for you. Thankfully, you got the home inspected at the time of sale, so it's not as, or as it went on the market, it's not as urgent as we find it when there's a buyer involved. But I would definitely do that with a licensed roofer. Know that depending on the exact scenario, they may also need the help of electrician / JEA. If depending on the amount of damage, you may have to have JEA secure power to that area. So you want to be sure that is handled by professionals and not even consider doing any of that yourself.
What, should I get JEA to look at it first?
No, start with a roofer. And the reason you want to start with a roofer is they'll determine, do they need help from the electrician because there's a repair to the pole or something of that sort. And then the electrician will be able, from that, they'll be able to determine, do you need JEA to secure power to the pole? When you turn the power off at your breaker, that doesn't turn the power off to the house. It just the house. So it's not overly difficult. It, the complexity comes in that you could end up needing the power company, the electrician, and the roofer almost at the same time. So it's not difficult. There's just a little bit of a scheduling. And it's potentially immensely dangerous. So I'm begging
you. I don't want to touch it.
Good job.
Yes.
Good job. Well, I appreciate you, Danny. I wish you great success. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye, sir. Something that people often get wrong. The data from Zillow, as well as the National Association of Realtors, says homes that are inspected at the time they're listed get more offers, sell for more money, and they sell quicker. So it's very much a positive.
It's a relief, you know, knowing you're buying something that's, you know, no surprises.
One of the things that holds some folks back from getting that pre-inspection is they think they need to make all the repairs. And it's exactly the opposite. There's no need to make the repairs. So your real estate agent gives you this little sheet that's a seller disclosure. All you do is you get the Home Pro does the inspection. On your seller disclosure, you write, see attached, bam, and you're done. And then their agent and, you know, working together with your real estate agent, you price the home. And you, that's how it works so good. And the more sophisticated agents do that routinely, and the less sophisticated agents come up with all this rigmarole, and they don't quite understand the system. So happy to sit with them over coffee.
Friends don't let friends buy homes without a home inspection.
And great agents don't let home sellers list homes.
Most expensive purchase of your life, almost.
Exactly correct. It's 7:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. One great segment coming up with you. That's likely going to be Jason with his gardenias. I wouldn't want to miss that.
Yep.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 7:54, final segment of the show. Grateful that you have been with us. Our final guest of the week will be Jason in Orange Park. He's got some gardenia issues. Welcome, Jason. Jason, can you hear me, sir? All righty. So our buddy Jason in Orange Park, he's got
Here. Hello.
Oh, okay. Well, start talking, dude.
I said hi there, but anyway. I basically have some gardenias, button gardenias, no more than a foot tall. They've been here for about a year. They've lasted pretty well. Got some green ones, some green leaves and such. They've all bloomed. But I'm starting to get a little bit of a yellow tinge in some of the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Are you overwatering, or they are in a wet area?
No, they're a little above everything, so the water kind of drains away.
Well, then,
I
would go get some chelated iron, or it's a fertilizer with trace elements in it, and put that on there. Gardenias are really, really susceptible to trace elements. You know, when they get out of whack, they're going to turn that yellow color. So that should solve your problem immediately. And then you just put it in a hose and sprayer, and you can spray the leaves. It absorbs right through the leaves. I say you'd have good looking leaves, good looking azalea in 2-3 weeks.
Oh, perfect.
Well, chelated iron. You can get that Home Depot.
Chelated iron. Got it.
All right.
Side question. What do you recommend for a quick product on Nut's Edge?
Well, Dismiss is good. Dismiss is probably the quickest acting, but you got to really be careful about the measurement of it. You know, you got to make sure you read the directions. It's a quick acting. They have the Sedge Hammer, but not as quick acting. But overall, the herbicide I like on Nut's Edge is going to be Dismiss.
Dismiss, got it. Okay, Dismiss and chelated iron.
Chelated iron, yeah. And you buy a little container of Dismiss. It's going to be expensive, but you'll be able to use it for a long time. All right?
Perfect. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Jason. And a reminder about the Springfield Home and Garden Tour today and tomorrow, noon to 5. It's free. Take your bicycle. However, if you'd like to go into the homes, I've got numerous homes opened and other special activities. That's a ticketed event. The tickets are at 904tix.com. That's today, noon to
that's
5
fun.
Tomorrow.
I love
5.
Old houses.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's plenty of neat places to go eat, have a beer ski made right there. My buddy Dennis at 5th and Main.
So if you don't want to buy an old house, they have the old house look-likes, too.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting you mentioned that. Urban infill, Terra Wise Homes and several others are actively building in the neighborhood. And they'll build you a house that's brand spanking new that looks just like the 100-year-old house adjacent to it. The other thing Terra Wise does is pretty interesting. Is they're very, very, very energy efficient. They can build you a net zero home if you actually want, meaning it's so sufficiently energy efficient, and the products and materials that they put in there blend it with solar on the rooftop, your net utility bill is zero.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of neat to take, you know, 21st century technology, put it into a neighborhood from essentially the late 19th, early 20th century. Kind of get the best of both worlds. That's some pretty cool stuff. Final thought for you for the day. Now, if you're going down to the Springfield tour, if you're going to the beach, wherever you're going, and when you have your hands on the steering wheel and you slide your left hand.
Yes.
Is it the right hand? Yeah. Which one's the wipers?
Left hand.
Slide your left hand over, and there's this kind of a metal rod that sticks out. It's got a little handle on it. If you want to make a right turn, just put your hand under that rod and tap up. And the blinker will come on, and the people around you will know what you're intending to do.
Yes.
And you'll be safer. And then when you're out of your turn, the system, as if by magic, the blinker stops. And when you come up to the next turn, so you'll be wanting to turn left, just lay your fingers gently on the top of that metal rod. You'll feel it click. And again, the blinker will come on. And the people around you, whether they're in cars or bikes or motorcycles or pedestrians, will know that you're coming so that you don't smash into them or they don't smash into you. And you'll get where you're going. It'll be safe. It'll be wonderful.
And then if you make a lane change, turn it off so you don't be faking everybody out.
With that said, 7:59.